You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
Well, no, very difficult challenges for sure. The main communication we've had with the players is along the same line as that the league is going to try to do everything they can to resume play.
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings. Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
Welcome back, Kings fans. I am Jesse Cohen. This is All the Kings Men, presented by Manscaped, an official partner of the LA Kings. You can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code KINGSMEN at manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com and use the code KINGSMEN. Now, there has been a lot of talk lately about how the NHL might resume its postponed season or when the NHL entry draft might happen. The reality is we don't have any answers for you right now, but since we always say happiness is measured by expectations, we thought we could at least lay out some of the issues facing the Kings and every other NHL franchise. I want to stress again, we do not have the answers, but we hope to shed some light on some conditions and concerns that may not get talked about as much. And now these are complicated issues, and resolving them won't be easy. Joining me now, Robin Dutton from the LA Kings. How are you doing today, Dutts?
I'm doing well, hanging in there.
So there's always a ton of questions that Kings fans want to know the answer to. There's always a ton of questions facing any NHL franchise or any professional sports team, really, on any date in the calendar. But obviously, there's been a lot of talk recently about the draft, about the season concluding. So we figured we would boil it all down to 10 questions facing the LA Kings right now. We are recording on May 10th, so keep that in mind when you're listening to this. Dutts, let's start off with number one, the big question. Will the season conclude?
Yeah, I think this is the biggest one that Kings fans and any hockey fans are kind of waiting to see what happens. It's a situation that's so fluid, it changes, if not hourly, daily. And so I think, you know, we're all just waiting to see what happens. There's definitely a lot of people involved in the decision, whether it's the NHL executives, the NHLPA, a few players are in the return to play committee. So just waiting to see what happens. But I think we all realize there's hundreds of millions of dollars here at stake, and we're all hopeful that there's going to be more hockey. But if I had to guess, I would say we're going directly into the 24-team playoffs.
Yeah, that's certainly where the conversation over the last two or three days has been leaning heavily. And I can see this from a number of different angles. As a fan of a team that isn't eligible for the playoffs, my attitude is sort of whatever, right? Finish it, don't finish it. I don't care. I just want to be able to talk about my team again. And all of this debate about whether or not they should restart it or what the playoffs looks like is sort of like, okay, I'm curious because I'm a hockey fan, but I don't want the Kings to come back and play whatever it is, 12 games left on the schedule, and then be done. Right.
Yeah, and I think they realize there's no point for those right. teams who aren't going to make it. So why have these guys? Some are traveling from Europe and Canada and whatnot. So it's just kind of creating more of a simplified process.
But the flip side of that is I understand having some tiny view of the business side of it. I get that rights holders, you know, like Fox Sports West and, you know, all the regional sports networks, that most of which are owned by Sinclair, there are contracts that say that a certain number of games have to be played in order for the money to be paid. And the league has not yet reached that number of games. So you would hope that the regional sports networks would understand that it's in their best interest to cut the league and the team some slack in this case and pay them either the full amount or, you know, prorated amount, whatever it is, and not just stiff them on the entire bill, because they are rights holders and partners. And moving forward, you'd hope to maintain a positive relationship. So I understand the impulse from a business standpoint. And from a human perspective, I have sympathy with the players like Drew Doughty, who says, you know, I don't know what the point of coming back would be. But on the flip side, you are paid, some of these players, you know, close to $10 million, if not more than that, a season. And it's sort of like, well, you know, one of the payoffs or trades you make in getting this sort of money is occasionally what might be considered unreasonable working conditions. You know, you have to work on holidays, you have to be away from your family. If the league restarts and you're not happy with how it goes, I mean, I don't know. I like I said, yeah. I see it from a fan perspective, a human perspective, and from the business perspective. And I honestly don't know what the right answer is. I don't know what should happen.
I think from the player side, you have to, like you said, be sympathetic and understanding to them. Obviously, this is their job and whatnot, but you'd hate to see someone like Drew come back for a handful of games and incur an injury because he hasn't been training properly or something like that that would take away from his performance next season or when it really counts. So there's that side of it too. If, you know, there's more players involved, there's also more of a likely chance that someone contracts the disease.
Right.
So I think they would not want to, you know, prevent the playoffs from happening just by finishing out the season. I think that's also something that's on their mind, but the players have definitely, you know, Tavares, McDavid, Scheifele, Van Riemsdyk, and Hainsey are all part of that committee. And they've made it very clear that they don't want to be away from their families for months at a time. And if they're going to finish out the season and play the playoffs, then it needs to be in a way that they can have access to their, you know, wife and kids and not be isolated in such extreme measures.
And there was an informal players poll that showed, I think, maybe 25% of the players weren't interested in the season concluding. And a certain percentage were interested in some limited form of playoffs. And then another percentage were interested in, you know, were insistent that the Stanley Cup be awarded in some fashion. And it, I think it matched pretty evenly with the number of teams that are in contention. So I just wanted to see another study that showed that. But that opens up the next question, which is how will free agency work this season? Even if the season does conclude, at this point, we're on May 10th. Free agency is set. The league's fiscal year is July 1st to July 1st. So not just players, but coaches, scouts, tons of people's contracts are set to expire July 1st. If the season is still going to happening, right, if they do some sort of playoffs, this 24-team playoff matchup that they're talking about, or even if it's a more traditional 16-team, it's likely that it will continue beyond July 1st if it doesn't even start before July 1st. So what happens to all those players? What happens to all those contracts? Players, I don't think technically are even paid for the playoffs. I believe their contracts only cover regular season games, and then there's a bonus paid for playoff performances. But of course, those playoffs happen before July 1st, so that'll have to be negotiated. And again, I don't know what the right answer is on how to handle that.
Yeah, I think this has actually not gotten really a lot of attention because of the draft and the season.
Yeah.
Those are the bigger pieces. But yeah, this definitely will likely have to be pushed back. And I feel for those players who, you know, maybe have a rental property or aren't sure where they're going to be staying next year. And so they're just kind of in limbo even more so. So luckily, we don't have too many, you know, Lewis, Perhorkin, Hutton, Wagner, Walker, Ryan, and Leff are the free agents for the Kings. So we'll have to see what happens, but I imagine that news will roll out shortly after all the other decisions are made.
Yeah, I mean, we talked recently on the podcast about how the Kings were uniquely positioned during the last lockout to benefit from the rules changes and the financial landscape shifting, and it helped them win the Stanley Cup twice. I feel like they're in a similar situation now, and they were even before all of this happened and all of these new you know, contingencies were going to have to be put in place. Like you mentioned, they only have a handful of free agents anyway. And Walker and Wagner and those guys are restricted free agents. I think Lewis, Prohorkin, and Hutton and Ryan are the only unrestricted free agents. And I think at this point, most fans were sort of on the fence as to whether or not any of those guys are brought back from the UFA. And I don't think there's any way they let Walker go. And I don't see any reason to let Wagner and Leff go, given that they control their rights. But this, again, just benefits the Kings. I can't imagine there's a strong free agency market, given that most teams probably won't know how secure their finances are moving forward, or what the salary cap is going to be. And we'll get to that next. So this is I figure this will probably be a buyer's market when free agency does eventually happen.
Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised. We've always mentioned we need another defenseman. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Rob Blake takes advantage of that. But
yeah,
it's just hard to say at this point what will happen.
Well, if he does, I think it certainly is in his favor. But that does bring us to the next question, which is number 3. And that is, will the salary cap go down? We know for a fact that revenue will go down, and the cap is tied to hockey-related revenue. That's a business term. But we don't know if the league and the Players Association and whatever other powers participate in this debate will agree that the cap should go down. I mean, one could argue it's not fair to the players, that they should suddenly be hurt by this, you know, force majeure that nobody could foresee coming. On the other hand, if the league's not making a ton of money, I'm not entirely sure why the labor force should get an undue percentage of it just because of a deal negotiated without taking into account this sort of thing. This is another question I don't honestly know what the answer is. I could go either way on it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it does go down. I think the losses are going to be shared across all areas of the organization. And, you know, we're just starting to understand the revenue losses, but mm-hmm. they are pretty major and their implications will be felt, I feel, for at least the next season, if not the next few.
And of course, this question ties into the fourth question, the next one, which is, will there be compliance buyouts? And one of the reasons I have read that people are arguing for compliance buyouts is if the salary cap does go down significantly to reflect the loss of revenue as a result of the season not being concluded, playoff tickets not being sold, because if they do have a playoffs, it is most likely to be done without fans. And the National Hockey League is a league that relies more heavily on ticket sales than the other professional sports in North America. Football, basketball, baseball all have much more lucrative television deals. So hockey relies on ticket sales. So the revenue will go down, which puts teams in a crunch to fill out a roster. And compliance buyouts, for those who are unfamiliar with the term, simply means that teams are allowed to buy out players without that contract counting towards their salary cap moving forward. The way it currently works, if you buy out a player, for example, the Kings bought out Ilya Kovalchuk, next season his contract still counts on their salary cap, even though they're not paying him the money, or they've already paid him the money. There is another issue, I think, that will lead to there being compliance buyouts, and that is the strength of the Canadian dollar. And I'm always sort of surprised that this issue isn't talked about more. Now, I am not a global finance expert, so take everything I'm saying with a huge grain of salt. But Canadian teams pay their players and their front office staff in Canadian dollars. Or sorry, they pay them in American dollars. They pay the players in American dollars, but they charge their fans in Canadian dollars. So if the price of the Canadian dollar drops to a certain amount, then those Canadian teams are losing money because they can't raise the price of tickets and merchandise and everything. They can't constantly alter that price to match the fluctuating strength of the Canadian dollar. And the strength of the Canadian dollar is tied incredibly to the price of oil, because oil is a huge part of the Canadian economy. And the price of oil has dropped because nobody's driving anywhere or flying anywhere or anything like that because of all the lockdowns. So I've pulled up the strength of the Canadian dollar to the U.S. dollar.
I don't know if we need to go there.
No, I'm not going to get too deep into it. I'm just saying it's all over the place, and there's nothing that says to me that it's going to get crazy, but it could. And that, to me, is just one more way that I think we will probably see compliance buyouts.
I'm honestly very impressed, Jesse, how much you know about Canadian finance and the industry. Like, I was just kind of proud there sitting listening to you.
Well, I care a lot about hockey, and so that leads me down these weird rabbit holes. The next question we're going to ask is, and I don't think this probably affects the Kings too much, but I know that there are other teams like Edmonton and Calgary with the Neil and Lucic trade, and it has to do with how many goals people score and how many games players play. But a lot of the trades that happen over the course of a season are conditional on things that can't happen, and so they'll have to negotiate how those are completed.
Yeah, I mean, you look at even the Taylor Hall trade, giving up a number one pick, and now, you know, was it all for nothing?
Right.
You know, I think all of those different things are up in the air. I don't think the Kings are having to negotiate any of their deals.
Well, the one that leaps out to me the most are the Clifford, I should say the ones that leap out to me, so the Clifford and the Toffoli deals. The Clifford one, because it was if the Leafs make the playoffs and Jack Campbell gets 6 wins. So presumably the Leafs are going to make the playoffs, assuming that there is a playoffs. But Jack Campbell didn't get his six wins, right? Because that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I don't know. Like, does that count? Like, do we, I mean, let's say Clifford doesn't re-sign with the Leafs, which is the sort of get out of jail free card there. But if the Leafs make the playoffs and Campbell isn't even given an opportunity to get those six wins, like, do the Kings get the second round pick anyway?
Yeah, I think there's 15 trades right now with conditions mm-hmm. tied to them. And most of them, I think, are pretty easy fixes that the league can figure out. But there's a few, I think, that are higher stakes. And it's going to – I don't envy those people who have to, you know, make those negotiations and make those decisions. But, yeah, there's definitely some hard decisions and teams coming together and agreeing upon maybe new conditions or, you know, new terms.
And imagine if you're the Vancouver Canucks and you traded Tyler Madden for Tyler Toffoli, who's an unrestricted free agent. And what if Vancouver doesn't even get an opportunity to compete for a Stanley Cup? They've given away a really valuable prospect for nothing, essentially. And I could completely understand from their perspective demanding that the trade be nullified or at mm-hmm. least, you know, they, you know, maybe they get Tim Schaller back, or maybe they don't give up picks. Maybe it's just Madden for Toffoli. And from a Kings perspective, I could completely understand them saying, like, no, you made the trade and yeah. it didn't work out for you. You could have missed the playoffs anyway. The fact that you missed the playoffs because of a pandemic is neither here nor there. I don't envy the people who have to negotiate these things.
No, I mean, on one side, like you said, business is business, and that was the deal that was made, but
right.
no one can predict that all these things happen. And so if that was Toffoli's last time he was in Vancouver, it would definitely be unfortunate for them.
Yeah, for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then that brings us to the biggest sort of current hot debate going on, and that is, when will the draft happen?
Yeah, I think these questions are all tied together. When will the draft happen, I think, is very closely determined by what happens with the rest of the season. And I think regardless of whether the draft is done in June or in the fall, it's going to be done virtually. Obviously, the league is very in favor of the draft happening in June. They saw the NFL was very successful. They had 37% increase in viewers on their first night. And so they see a lot of, you know, financial rewards in terms of having it there. Everyone's at home, you know, hockey's back on TV. And so that could be great for the league revenue wise. But I think a lot of team general managers and teams are concerned about, just like we've talked about, the fairness of it. And how does the lottery work? Will trades be able to happen? There's so many question marks and unknowns there that I think it's hard to move forward with just the finances in mind.
The answer to this one, when will the draft happen, will sort of involve, I think, a lot of the issues that we raised in the first five. So why don't we look at who's in favor of an early draft that happens before or concurrent with a playoff restart?
Yeah, obviously the league, mm-hmm. Rights holders, NBC, Rogers, anyone who's going to be airing the draft are going to be in favor of it. I would be surprised if prospects were in favor of, or if weren't in favor of it. You know, obviously they're anxious to figure out where they're going to be playing next year, and it'll give them more time to develop and kind of connect with their team, even if it is remotely. So I think those are kind of the key members who would be in favor of the June draft. Those not in favor, like we mentioned, probably a lot of NHL team executives would prefer to push back until they have a decision made with the season and see how things go in terms of, you know, you can't have someone winning the draft lottery and winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there are so many, like, I have finally come around to just being against the draft in general. And I know that it has to happen this year, and I think probably next year, just because of all the conditional picks that have been put on the books, and that you can't really just nullify all of those things. But I hope, even though I know it won't happen, I hope that this is the end of the draft at all.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, I don't necessarily side with the league on this one. Usually I understand when the league makes a decision that sort of protects its business, like, for example, not sending players to the Olympics. I get that. I understand it. Right? Whether or not I agree with it, I understand that if you pay a player millions of dollars, you don't want him to go play in an international tournament you know, with the highest level of competition where he could get hurt and cost you your investment. But in this case, I know the NFL draft was hugely popular and tons of people watched it and it got great ratings. I just don't think the NHL draft will be as equally popular. And so to use that as the biggest reason to push forward for it, I don't think I agree with that.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, the NFL obviously owns a lot of the sports market in the U.S. And so automatically, I think people are already engaged in that sport. I think not the draft, but if we were to play hockey in the summer when other sports weren't going on, I think that would definitely grow hockey in general as a sport in the U.S. and around the world, just because it has that airtime and people are tuning in who may not usually do that. So I think it definitely has the opportunity to grow the game, but I wouldn't force a draft just for that one reason. But I think in terms of the Kings, like Rob Blake has said, he's comfortable either way. Nothing will be the same regardless. So right. We'll just have to make those adjustments. I think on the digital side, it'll be really interesting seeing how we are broadcasting the game and connecting with our prospects and seeing what kind of fun things we can do to interact with fans at home. But if the league does go directly into the playoff tournament, there are seven teams who will be eligible and the Kings are one of them to earn that first overall pick. So I think we're in a good spot regardless.
Yeah, well, this goes back to what I said about the Kings being uniquely positioned to benefit from the landscape being, you know, shifting as it is in the moment, right back to 2005 and losing that season. Yeah, there's no way that they're going to do a 31-team draft lottery. That's not going to happen. Whatever teams don't make the playoffs, whether it's 7 or, you know, 15, those will be the teams that'll have the option. I've heard rumors that they're going to do like the old system where only one person wins and you can only move up as many as 4 spots. And so, yeah, from the Kings' perspective, they're probably going to get a top 5, top 7 pick, something like that. It's a deep, supposed to be a deep draft within the first 10 or so spots. So, yeah, whether they get Lafreniere or Drysdale or Byfield or any of these other names that I see, from the Kings' perspective, yeah, Rob Blake is right. It probably doesn't change much for them. They'll get whatever pick they get. It's out of their control anyway. And so the only real difference, I think, from a Kings' perspective is in past years, you'd have the draft and then you'd immediately have a development camp. Or prospects camp, or I'm blanking on what it was called, but yeah, all the guys from draft would fly straight to El Segundo. And that obviously won't happen.
No, I'm sure they'll be onboarded in, you know, a different, unique way. And they'll start training over the summer and connect with our different resources. And then I'm sure development camp will happen in the fall and be pushed back like everything else.
I guess I sort of accidentally bled directly into the 7th question, which is which pick will the Kings get? Sorry about that. But the Kings currently sit in 28th place, 4th overall, if there was no lottery. But again, there probably will be. What do you think of the 24-team playoff format that they're proposing?
I'm into it. I mean, I don't think there's a reason to bring our guys back. Obviously, Rob Blake has talked about it and said whether it happens or not, we'll find positives in that situation. And either way, it's okay. But I think let's move on with playoffs. Let's award the Stanley Cup. That's the biggest priority. And then from here, let's use those other 7 teams and one of them will win the draft lottery and the rest of them will still get pretty great picks. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I think I am. I mean, at this point, I just want as much hockey as can be played safely and reasonably. So if it's a best of 3 play-in round and then a normal, you know, thing where it's, even if it was like, you know, single elimination first round, best of 3 second round, best of 5 third round, and then 7 game final series, I guess I kind of do want to see as much hockey as humanly possible, although as in poor taste as this is, my preseason prediction that the Golden Knights would miss the playoffs currently true.
I just can't imagine. They're talking about playing in different host cities and having like 3 games per day. Like, people's quarantine is about to get way better if they can watch, you know, a Blackhawks game at 9, Kings game at noon, maybe Stars at 4. Like, it's pretty fun, I think, the thinking about that type of opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I had for some reason, I had resisted binge watching anything with the exception of Tiger King, during the first 4 to 5 weeks of this. And then just this past week, I've decided, okay, well, I guess I'll do it. And I watched all of You, for example, both seasons. And yeah, the day goes by a lot faster. I'm sort of kicking myself for not having thought of it earlier. So yeah, if I can watch 3 hockey games a day.
And I think that's putting yourself to better use than binge watching on Netflix, you know? It's kind of work. And you can get your family around and everyone can get involved. I think it'd be pretty fun. I'd be excited about it.
Well, and I guess the UFC had a fight last night, or a couple of fights last night. And I think it was Greg Wyshynski from ESPN remarked that he was surprised that it was so much better than professional wrestling. Or maybe it was Bill Simmons. I don't remember. But somebody remarked that they were shocked that a UFC fight with no fans was so much better than a WWE event with no fans. And I thought, well, that's just silly. UFC is real competition. The fans might add something to it when a great play happens and the fans goes nuts, but I'm really not watching sports for the fans. So yeah, 3 hockey games a day would be great.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about what other elements we could be adding in if there aren't fans. Like, do you add in the noise of fans when a goal is scored? Cause it would be kind of weird otherwise if it's silent. Or do you create different camera angles where you're down closer to the ice and, you know, other in-game elements that might not happen? Like maybe it's virtual and you put up a green screen around the glass and do something like that. I've seen so many different ideas suggested, and I think it could be really cool for teams to get creative, and same with different broadcast partners to get creative in ways that to deliver a unique experience to those at home.
If they do the Bubble City idea, like, that people have suggested, and for those who are unaware, that, you know, a bunch of teams would all meet in one city, whether it's, you know, for example, in the Pacific Division, maybe it would be Vegas, just because there's hotels and infrastructure set up to host, you know, dozens if not hundreds of people. If there are multiple teams in one area, and if there are multiple games per day, I would really love to see the players who aren't playing in the game in the stands, and I would really love to see their reactions. You know, like, yeah. I really want to see how Drew Doughty, I mean, obviously the Kings wouldn't be participating in the playoffs, but I'd really want to see how Drew Doughty or PK Subban or Matthew Tkachuk, or, you know, one of the guys with personality in the stands watching another team reacting to a great play. Like, to me, that would be fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be really interesting. I just wonder if they are all staying in the same place, if everyone's going to quarantine and stay by themselves, or if they're all getting together in the hotel hallways. Like, what's going on?
Well, I guess depending on how tight you make the bubble, they should hypothetically be allowed to commingle, right? Like, if you can actually control who comes in and who comes out. But that's for far, far smarter people than me to worry about.
Yeah, totally.
We're going to touch on 2 more questions that have nothing to do with the shutdown or the, you know, strange position the league finds itself in, before circling back to one more. And the next one is, and this only came up because of the Rob Blake conference call earlier this week, and that is, when will Jeff Carter be healthy?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, unfortunately, it's not for another few months. I think this pause has given a lot of injured players time to really rehab and get better and rest up. But at the same time, they don't have the same access to the facilities. And so I think with Carter, part of the issue is he needs to travel to see a specialist for further treatment. And so obviously that it can't be done right now. So he's just hanging tight and doing the best he can to take care of his injury. But it definitely, he'll be ready for next season if that's the way it goes. But it would be nice for him if the season doesn't resume and he can just focus on getting back to 100%.
It's rare that I do a double take when I'm listening to a podcast or listening to anything, because there's nothing to double take to, right? It's in your earbuds. But I was listening to the Rob Blake conference call, and somebody asked, you know, when would Jeff Carter be healthy? And I guess I had just assumed that because the season was winding down and because they were so far out of a playoff spot, that Jeff Carter was being held out of the lineup more just sort of as a favor to him, and also as a chance to get certain players into the lineup late in a season where they weren't going to make the playoffs. I didn't think it was serious. I just assumed it was like, all right, well, you got to get young players playing time, and this is a convenient way. And, you know, he's an older player and he's a veteran and he's had injuries. So, all right, give the guy a break, cut him some slack. But then Rob Blake's answer, which was that it wouldn't be for, you know, at least a few months. I just really caught me by surprise. I didn't realize it was that serious.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting. I just hope he, you know, is getting healthy and we'll be back out there in no time.
Yeah, and that sort of raises question number 9, or at least half of it, which is, have Gabe Vilardi and Mikey Anderson made the team for good? Gabe Vilardi obviously joining the lineup as a result of Carter not being in it, and Mikey Anderson called up late, and both of them looked every bit the NHL player to me. I wouldn't be surprised that the next time the LA Kings play a regular season game, both of those guys aren't in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the plan. That's the hope for them. Obviously, no spot is ever guaranteed, so that's always up to them to come in and earn it in camp and show the staff that they've been working hard over the summer to be an NHL player full-time. But yeah, I think the reason that we traded away so many veterans and are building towards the future is so that these young guys can come mm-hmm. in and get that experience and earn their role. And so, yeah, I'm hopeful that Vilardi and Anderson will be on the team for good next season. And I think they have lots of other young guns, you know, in the works coming up to join them as well. You know, you have Cale Clegg, Tobias Bjornfoot, Mikey Simont. There's a bunch of strong Rain players who I think are close to making that jump, and they're all going to be fighting for that spot.
I mean, without getting too deep in the weeds, we'll start on defense just because there's fewer players. Doughty, Roy, and Walker are playing, right? I mean, and mm-hmm. and one of the other things that popped out to me from the Rob Blake conference call, and it's part of the reason I never really pay too much attention to prospects or prospect talk, but Rob Blake was talking about Matt Roy, and he said that last season they sort of put him in the lineup just on a lark. Right, like they were planning on putting Clegg in, but then he broke his foot, and then they sort of put Roy in because he had played well in the AHL, and they're just kind of curious, but the season was dead, and you know, blah, 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 and they put him in, and then he said, and they never took him out of the lineup, and that was it. Like, he just, he had a weird opportunity that came up out of nowhere, and he seized it, and now he's an NHL player, and now he's part of the lineup, and he's one of the most reliable defensemen they have. And he again referenced the first 2 or 3 games of the season, which, frankly, I'm getting kind of tired, because, like, you wouldn't say, oh, well, this player had 2 really bad games in January. You just wouldn't think about it. They'd just be mm-hmm. 2 random weird games. But because it was the first 3 games of the season, because it was on the road, and because he got undressed on 1 or 2 plays, everybody who talks about Matt Roy now has to do the, well, he had a couple bad games at the beginning of the season, but the coach had a talk with him and blah. It's like, can we not just say he had a great season? Anyway, the point is, Doughty, Walker, and Roy are the right side. They all shoot right. They're great. They're fine. They're stable. Bjornfoot, like you mentioned, Clegg, Anderson. Now the question is, do they stock the left side of the blue line exclusively with rookies and young prospects, or do they bring back a Ben Hutton or go outside of the team and bring in a restricted, a UFA? They signed McDermott to a contract extension, so presumably he's on the team. So I mean, Mikey Anderson could very easily just have a spot. Plus there's Cole Hultz. I mean, there's just a ton of guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, like you said, touching on the Roy success, like, he was drafted 7th round, 194th yeah. overall. Yeah, like, exactly. You just don't know how these players are going to develop and when they have that opportunity, if they're going to step up and be consistent and what you need at the time. So yeah, we definitely have a big prospect pool that's really exciting. And so it just depends if those guys that we pull from. I wouldn't be surprised if we did sign another veteran defenseman just for experience back there. But we definitely have a lot of great, exciting up-and-coming prospects regardless.
And that brings us to the 10th question, which is a combination of what you just mentioned about the great prospect pool and the situation that the league finds itself in. And that is, and this is a really, this is probably the question that distresses me the most.
the word distress, I can just see you.
And that is, will there be an AHL season at all in 2020-2021?
Yeah, I have a very hard time delivering this news. Don't shoot the messenger. But I do not believe we are going to be seeing AHL hockey next year. I think that, like, everything in the world is impacted, and that includes the junior hockey, mm-hmm. OHL, WHL, NCAA. Like, all of these different prospect leagues are being affected, and the AHL unfortunately is very ticket sales focused, and the majority of their revenue will not be there if they're playing without fans. So for a lot of teams, they're owned by individuals who can't take that type of revenue loss. For us, we're very lucky to be under the AEG umbrella, and so I think it would be a little bit easier. But again, I think the AHL season for this season is gone, and for 2020 to 2021 as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the AHL doesn't have a television deal. Obviously, there's not a lot of clamoring for, you know, ways to consume their games that would generate a lot of revenue. And like you said, if you can't have fans in the building, that's sort of it. And it's not just the AHL. There's also the ECHL, the USHL, all the independent leagues, and even the junior teams, right, mm-hmm. don't generate a ton of revenue. I just want to read you real quick what the salary cap structure for the ECHL is. And now this information is from the 2018-19 season, so it's a little out of date, but not too much. Would you care to guess what the weekly salary, and it's weekly, by the way, what the weekly salary cap is for an ECHL team in the 2018-19 season is?
I have no idea. I know those guys don't make any money. They make like a couple hundred bucks a week, I think.
It's $13,000 per week for a full roster.
It's insane.
Now, one caveat of that is if a guy has an AHL contract, his AHL team will pay him. The ECHL team doesn't have to worry about it. But that's how low the salary cap is. And the salary floor is was $9,850. So, I mean, I don't think there's going to be an AHL season. I don't think there's going to be an ECHL season. I sincerely doubt there will be NCAA hockey played in the same fashion that it was. Because if college campuses don't open up, you're not getting an NCAA season. Junior teams are just as financially, you know, dependent on fans as other minor. Like, hockey may have to completely restructure its entire non-NHL North American playing format.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you start thinking about not only all those different leagues you mentioned, but even our AHL players who we rely on and call up quite often, if they don't have a place to play, like where mm-hmm. are our developing guys playing? And is it the Kings having a big roster and maybe like a practice training group? I don't know what that looks like, but it definitely, again, has so many different implications and there's so many different factors involved, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
I mean, you mentioned in the notes that we sort of sent back and forth to each other before this episode, Cole Hultz, Tyler Madden, Alex Turcotte all signed entry-level contracts. You know, Turcotte was set to join the Reign March 12th, right as the season was postponed. Those guys don't have an option but to play on the NHL team. I mean, there could be guys who lose their NHL jobs, you know, because teams need to find a way. Like, if the Kings need to find a place for Cole Hultz, Madden, and Turcotte to play next season, and it's more valuable to them to have those players in a lineup and playing, regardless of the level of competition, that could impact three other players that the Kings don't sign or don't keep in the lineup because it's more valuable to them moving forward to have those prospects. And every team is going to have to juggle that decision, right? A team that's a cup contender may be more comfortable with their top prospects sitting out a season, whereas teams like the Kings that aren't cup contenders right now, well, maybe those veterans, maybe they make a decision to keep a prospect laden roster over. I mean, it's just going to, every team is going to have to make that decision. And again, I don't envy the people who have to make those decisions.
No, and I think the trajectory for a lot of teams, whether they were on their way to a cup or whether they're rebuilding in a situation like us, everyone, it kind of gets out to this even playing field a little bit with everything getting shaken up. You know, it definitely will throw some kinks in a few different teams' plans. So I'm definitely very curious to see what happens. I think, as are those prospects, I'm sure Turcotte is at home, you know, itching to get back out there and wanting to join the team right away. But like everyone, we're just being patient and hopefully it all works out.
Yeah, and I know the fans are itchy and ready to watch hockey. So hopefully there's some sort of conclusion to this. Hopefully there is some sort of news to talk about. But Robin, I want to thank you very much for joining me. Sorry, Dutz, I should say. Dutz, thank you for joining me.
Anytime.
I'm trying to remember to call you Dutz.
That's okay. Whatever works. I'll respond to anything.
All right, but perfect.
Yeah, hopefully we're all watching hockey again soon. And We'll catch up next week.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon, Duds. Well, I hope you enjoyed those questions. One of the hazards of podcasting is that your conversations can quickly become irrelevant or obsolete. Since recording that conversation on Sunday, the AHL officially canceled the remainder of its season. Possibility we neglected to mention is that the NHL could see a drastic expansion of rosters to accommodate a lack of options for AHL prospects that don't have anywhere else to play. And as I said at the outset, we just don't know what decisions will be made. But I wanted to give you a chance to get excited about some of those prospects, so I'm turning it over to Jack Jablonski and Ryan Golcher for a segment of Trading Jabs re-recorded about 10 days ago.
Don't nobody say nothing and get fired.
There's a hockey expert from Minnesota.
Oh boy.
And a below average comedian from Chicago.
Dylan Strom's a stud. They met in college, and now they have a podcast with the LA Kings. That makes sense, right? This is Trading Jabs.
What's up, Kings fans? Welcome back to another segment of Trading Jabs. On this segment, we're going to cover a little bit of the prospects call that happened earlier this week. It was moderated and hosted by Alex Faust, the play-by-play for the Kings. Ryan, co-host here of Trade and Jabs. We've got three takeaways each. I'm interested to see what you took away from this as someone who's not necessarily a diehard Kings fan, but obviously is in love with the game of hockey. The Kings' future is bright, and it's going to be interesting to see where you go with this, so I'll leave it to you to start.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't really know every detail about these people's careers, but just their personalities, I kind of seem like they'd be good locker room guys. They had three different personalities, which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
So they talked to Alex Turcotte, who's a Wisconsin stud. They talked to Cole Holtz, who is the defenseman on Penn State, who's also a Wisconsin stud.
From Wisconsin.
He's from Wisconsin. And then they talked to Madden, who was part of the Toffoli trade, and he's living in Florida right now. So three American players, first of all. Interesting. But they all had different personalities, which I thought was pretty cool. So Turcotte was like, he seems like a potential team leader, honestly. He's got this great personality, fun talk, like was eager to talk, had good opinions to say. Cole Holtz, really quiet defenseman, very quiet, but seems kind of like an enforcer to me. I don't know. Did you pick up on that?
I guess I'll start with number three here with Cole Holtz. He's a guy who I think, and it was described in the call that they had in terms of him being very simple on the ice. I agree with the takeaway that he was, quiet, maybe a little bit of an enforcer. But the one thing that I kind of gained out of, the conversation that he had was his ability to likely fill the void of Alec Martinez when he was traded away, just because if you look at a little bit of his game, you can see his ability to be simple, as he was the first one to say, make the first breakout pass, be able to do the simple things. He seems like the guy who plays his best game if you don't hear about him on the broadcast. Someone who just does his job, digs the puck out of the corners, and at the end of the day, ends up with a plus two, and you never heard of him just because that's the type of game he plays. So
yeah,
he seems like a smart player. He seems extremely intelligent, and I think staying, I believe it was 3 years at Penn State, really worked out for him, as he ended up as a second team All-American.
And actually, another really big takeaway is his coach described him as being an incredibly low maintenance player.
That always helps in the locker room.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a relief to know, like, he is just going to do his job, do it well, and he's not going to – he'll just get along with everyone. So that is going to be awesome for the Kings. And then Madden, he kind of told the story about his getting traded and how surprised he was, and he was excited, obviously. But he seems like a good guy, too. I don't know. You can't really tell who these guys really are in these Zoom calls. They just look like – like 15-year-old like streamers, like they just like kids.
They're all on Twitch,
Hey,
here's me. Follow me.
he looks like me right now. He just has like this. He was just in a white like empty room. Like I was like, this is an NHL player. Like this is so funny. But no, he has a good personality too. So I think the Kings kind of got lucky. They got okay. Well, this is something I do need to say. There are three American players, and they all have Canadian accents. How does this keep happening?
I think the Canadian accent kind of goes hand in hand with hockey players. Yeah. At times, I think I pull it out just because being from Minnesota, and you're just around them all the time. So it kind of just slowly seeps in. You know, I don't have an answer for you, unfortunately, but that's, I guess, my take on your question there.
I was shocked. They're like, yeah, my name's, you know, Tyler Madden. I'm from Florida. Like, what? You're from Florida?
His dad, and this is my number two here, his dad is John Madden, not the Monday Night Football John Madden, NHL John Madden. He wins 3 Stanley Cups. He's from Ontario. So that probably is where he gets it from. Obviously, right. Being from Florida throws you off, as you mentioned. But the interesting thing with Tyler and his father, well, first, he's a helicopter parent, apparently.
He brought up a bunch.
Yeah, he was very clear about that. But on a serious note, you know, I think it's going to pay large dividends, and it has already. You know, you can tell that he knows the game in and out. You know, being a coach's kid, you know, not only was John in the NHL for 15, 16 years, I think he's now a head coach for the Cleveland Monsters, or has been for the past 3 years. He was an assistant coach for Florida, I believe. So he's beyond his years when it comes to knowledge and his ability at the weight of roughly 150, 60 pounds to be successful and put up more than a point a game in college, especially in the conference that he did being at Northeastern. It's impressive, and you can kind of tell just based on what he was talking about, how he was talking about the game on the Zoom call. So it's going to be impressive to see what he is. I'm probably the most excited to see how he plays, maybe just because he played a lot of the, you know, type of game that I played, a little feisty and very offensive oriented. So that's going to be extremely fun to watch. And the good thing for him is he's much more skill wise talented than his father. And to be able to have the knowledge of what his dad was doing and why he was doing it, is going to be extremely important for the, you know, for his success in his career, if he can, you know, add more skill to what his father was able to do.
Yeah, and his mom was a gymnast, he said. So he's been like an athlete family forever. So
for sure.
I think the Kings should be really excited about that guy. He seems seems like a great guy who's going to be really athletic and really, really knows the game. So
yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, I know the Kings got a second round draft pick and Madden. I don't recall if there was anything else on top of that trade, but I do know that Madden was a large piece to getting rid of Toffoli, not in terms of, you know, bye-bye, but getting back Tyler Madden was a large part of what the Kings wanted in that trade, solely because of the upside and the future that this kid has to be a true scorer and a true leader and a guy that really understands the game in and out moving forward.
Yeah. So, he said his dad is always talking about it, like making him practice, workout. So he's like, they're all staying sharp. That's another thing they said, is that they're all working out and staying sharp. The cool thing I thought was Cole Holtz is really good friends with the Suitors.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. So he's been like working out with the Suitors at like their house in Wisconsin, it sounds like. I didn't know they're from there, but so he's been working out 5 days a week, and he's going to be, you know, tip top shape come quarantine end. So I thought that was pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing because he mentioned that he's family friends with them, and, you know, he's kind of followed the coattails of Suitor's game and at the same time, you know, works out with him. So I think you're going to see a very professional mindset out of him, a mature mindset in terms of on the ice and off the ice with Cole. So it's an exciting thing to see because you know, not everyone at that age is mature enough or ready. It looks like, you know, based on, you know, how Cole talks about the game and how you see him working out right now and staying in shape, that he's going to be ready to go. He'll probably be one of the better or more ready players when it comes to development camp or training camp or whatever that next ice time is when he steps on the ice in a Kings jersey.
Yeah. And do you know the Suitors yourself?
I do know Ryan. Ryan's a great guy. He's extremely humble, extremely low maintenance, you know, a lot like Cole has kind of described. I think we're going to see a little bit of a Ryan Suitor 2.0 out of Holtz based on the way he's talked about his game and you know, the time he spent around Ryan. But yeah, no, Ryan is a class act. He's an extremely underrated player in the way that we talk about defensemen, just because he's one of those guys, like I mentioned, that if he plays the right way, you're never going to hear about him on the broadcast because he just shuts someone down and doesn't need to do anything else. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting. I'm excited to see if we get another Ryan Suter 2.0 because by all means, Suter's career so far has been spectacular.
Isn't it kind of funny that if you're a great defenseman, it means nobody noticed you?
I know, right? It's an interesting concept, yeah. Right?
Well, I mean, nowadays the Norris Trophy is, you know, who's the flashiest defenseman, but not always. I'm not saying that, but
it's definitely geared towards that based on the way that we've seen skill in the NHL develop and how much more offense is being produced or at least focused on in terms of the rules and the way the game is called and played. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point because not every defenseman on, I guess I'll reword this. Every defenseman, the best defenseman on your team isn't always the guy that puts up the most points and is the flashiest and the most skilled.
Yeah, exactly. But it's hard to deny, like, when Carlson has an 82-point season, you're like, well, that's got to be the best defenseman because he just scored 82 points. Yeah. But also there's people like Hjalmarsson who don't score that much, but they just break down plays all the time and they're blocking shots like crazy.
Yeah.
Cole Holtz, from what I know of him, will probably be more of a Hjalmarsson Suter defenseman or player where he's just kind of filling his role and just doing exactly what's needed. And that Penn State team he's on is like one of the best Penn State teams I've ever had. And I just watched that game.
Yep.
They're playing a game on TV and I watched it. They're freaking amazing. So yeah, I mean, the Kings should be really excited about all three of these guys.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's interesting you mentioned that because my biggest takeaway is just the confirmation that the Kings' future is extremely bright. You know, not only is it just these three guys, you know, they have the number one prospect pool in the NHL, as, you know, noted by The Athletic. I mean, look at this. You've got Gabe Vilardi, who already has made an impact in the NHL. He's just under a point a game through, 11 games, I believe. Bjornfoot, who has been highly talked upon about Drew Doughty, of all people. You know, Kaliev, who was one of the best goal scorers in the O, I believe, in the OHL. Fagamo, Kapari, Akil Thomas. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's like 23 deep. And for just these three people to be this impressive, and they're scattered all over the list, you know, with Turcotte being number one, it just shows that the Kings have, you know, done the right thing in terms of, you know, rebuilding on the fly a little bit in terms of, you know, still trying to be competitive, but keep your roster intact for when these kids are ready. You still have a core that's a little bit older that can help guide these players to greatness.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of teams are doing that right now, too. I would say the Blackhawks are probably in the same position. And did you notice what was in Turcotte's wall? What was on his wall?
Why don't you tell us, Mr. Goldscher?
He had a Patrick Kane jersey. There we go. Island Lake, Illinois guy. But he also had a Kopitar jersey and then his own jersey. His own Kings jersey looked like, or whatever it was. So
what's your opinion on, let's just say, college guys or high school guys, guys and juniors that have their own jersey on the wall?
Pretty cool.
You like it?
if I was an athlete, I'd put my jersey on the wall.
Fair enough.
I've never been good enough at anything to put it on the wall. So
maybe we'll get you a poster of yourself for a stand up or a movie when you're in one.
Best podcast co-host.
the award goes to.
I don't even think I'm that. I don't even think you can even give me that. But I don't know. I think it's cool. You know, putting your own jersey on the wall. I don't know. Did you do that? You put 13 on the wall?
I never had my own jersey just because, you know, unfortunately I was injured at 16 and we didn't really have extra jerseys around that we could keep because it was always one of those like return it at the end of the year. But there were a few. It was more so of like the heroes. I always had like a Pavel Datsyuk jersey hanging in the wall and, you know, Gretzky and Bobby Orr and stuff like that. So that was more where I laid. But at the same time, like, I agree. Like, having your own jersey up there, it's neat, especially when you're able to not necessarily flaunt something, but for sure be able to, you know, look at something that you're proud of.
I just thought of something that I think I might have made a dumb comment. It could be his dad's jersey because his dad did play in the NHL.
Yep, could be.
So this whole conversation could have been for naught. He could be just putting up his dad's jersey.
Hey, well, either way, it's something he's proud of. And regardless of whose jersey it is, you know, it's in the family and it's something that, you know, the Turcotte's obviously going to have a lot of success in the bloodline, that's for sure. And we'll see where it goes. But on that note, Ryan, you got anything else for this?
No, I think they're a bunch of cool guys. They all seem down to earth and they sound good players as well. So I'd say the Kings should be nothing but stoked on these guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small piece of a large prospect pool, but definitely three of, as of right now, maybe the more important pieces when it comes to the immediate future of the Kings roster and a little bit of that impact that we can see, you know, seeping into the lineup in the next year to come. So on that note, we'll send it back to Jesse, and this has been Trade and Jabs.